Welcome to Voting Matters, a series of conversations about the voting process from WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Now, here's your co-hosts, Liza Holland, president of the Lexington chapter of LWV, and WUKY's Alan Lytle.
Welcome once again, Liza.
So glad to be here.
All right, so a lot of things that are going on in the league world. So tell us, what is happening right now?
Oh boy, the league is definitely engaged in all kinds of, a lot of it's preparatory work, right? Because now we're gearing up for candidate forums and meet and greets. Also really ramping up with booking the calendar for being out in the community to register voters. Exciting stuff here with Voting Matters, because we're going to kind of lean into this civic education piece. And we're also getting out there a little bit. We're going to be a co-sponsor of the next No Kings rally, because we're really feeling the need to hold government accountable these days.
Yes, and we mentioned in the last podcast, I think we're going to see the civic assembly that's going to be kicking in. I think orientation is on March 1st.
Yeah, it's exciting. I love that participatory government piece. I just think that that's going to, you know, hopefully it will be a colossal success, and we'll be able to do it on a continuing type of a basis.
So we've now reached that point where we introduce our guest, and this is, I think, the first time that we've actually had an Urban County Council member sitting in that chair.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
And let's welcome in 5th District Council member Liz Sheehan.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk with you all today.
Well, we are so excited to have you here and to kind of be talking a little bit about local government, because a lot of times people don't really realize that the biggest impacts on their lives actually come from local government. If you're taking kind of a high level view, what do you think the importance of local government is?
I think it's for the exact reason you just named. The things that we do at the local government level are the things that affect your daily life. You know, it's the streets you drive on. It's the services that are provided by the city. It's housing and land use decisions. So whether that pothole outside of your door gets fixed, that's us. The stormwater and sanitary sewer around the city, that's us. So it's the things that really, really have that day-to-day impact.
What was the biggest surprise when you decided to get on council that government is responsible for that you'd had no idea?
Gosh. Well, there's so many things. And I have an academic background. I'm on the faculty at UK. And so I love to learn. So there are things that I have gotten to learn about that I would have never had any exposure to if I weren't on council. One of those things is like street and road maintenance. Like I mentioned, the streets you drive on, right? Well, I have a neighborhood that has entirely concrete streets, not the typical asphalt that you see around. So now I know all things about concrete. You may recall about 2 years ago, we were going through this back and forth with one of our utilities about one of their vegetation management practices. So I learned all about our electrical system and the transmission lines that get electricity all around our county. So, you know, the things that might have been surprising, I love to dig into, because that's just my natural tendency.
If someone only pays attention to like the national political scene, what are they missing about local government?
I think we've talked about some of the day-to-day things that happen at the local government, but one of the things that I really value about our local government is that it's the most accessible government to you. So you might, you know, call a phone and get a staffer or somebody or a voicemail for a federal or even a state legislator. When you are contacting your local district office, it is an office of two people. It's me and my legislative aide. So you're going to be able to get in touch with me directly about whatever it is that you're concerned about, whether it's a policy issue or, you know, a neighborhood issue, all of those things. So it's that accessibility piece that you're missing if you only engage at these higher levels.
Makes sense. And you mentioned a legislative aide. Talk about the importance of having one of those.
Oh, yes. Oh, goodness.
Wouldn't work without him.
Right. So, you know, council members, you know, we have a lot of roles and a lot of responsibilities, but we are often spending our time going from meeting to meeting. right? So you're sitting in our committee meeting, you're sitting in a council meeting, you're sitting in a work session, you're at a board or commission meeting. So that can inhibit sometimes the amount of time that we have to do our prep work or to respond to constituents and to read all of the emails that we get. Our staff person, our legislative aides, they are so valuable to us. They are a full-time position. Every council member has one legislative aide. And they help us with responding to constituents. They help us weed through all of the documents that we get and help condense that for us and kind of point out things that we might need. They help us research the policy things that we want to work on. And then, you know, love their work here and the heart that they put into this. They are responsible for our calendar. And you don't want to see mine. It's crazy.
We had to book this appearance through the legislative aid. Correct?
We did indeed. We did indeed. Yeah. And actually, that kind of gives me an interesting follow-up question, because here in Fayette County, it's supposedly our city council are part-time jobs. And I think that's one of the questions that the Civic Assembly is going to address. Tell us how you think that this position may have evolved to where it really ought to be a full-time position.
Well, I think politics have evolved. You know, when we set up our government, this merged government in the 70s, it was a very different type of government and a different role for council members. We didn't have our standing committees and all of the background work that we had to do. We also, I don't think the community expected as much from us at that time either on constituent responses. So, you know, my district is one that is very engaged. I hear from them very often. I'm going to a neighborhood meeting tonight. And I think that time where you want your council member to work on policy and the bigger picture things also has to be balanced with the time that you're spending on the constituent services, that day-to-day stuff where someone is contacting me because they are having the pothole, the snow removal concern, the sewer issue. We have a lot of aging infrastructure in our county. You may or may not know that, but that is one of the big things that happens in my district with the older houses that are contained there. So that constituent response piece takes a lot of time. But, you know, again, I haven't this academic background. You want me to be prepared for my meetings, right? So you want me to be spending the time to read all the documents very carefully and to make informed decisions and to, you know, process all of the feedback that we're hearing from the community on an issue. And that takes time, but that really, I don't think when these positions started decades ago, it was the same kind of position.
I would say that you're exactly right there, because I look at how our local government has grown. And tell us a little bit about all the different ways that the community can and does get engaged. I was really shocked to find out how many boards and commissions we really have.
Oh, yeah, we have over 70, and we've actually been doing a review of those right now. There's a subcommittee working on that led by Councilmember Shayla Lynch and Vice Mayor Wu. And that is one way people can get involved. But if you want to interact, like I said, we're accessible, right? And we've been trying to actually expand the ways that we get to the community and hear from the community. And you can do the standard, you know, come to a council meeting and give public comment. You can call us and email us. But we've actually been trying to make some of the things more public and more out in the community. So we have added a program called Engage Lexington. That's a website that you can go and you can type in engage.lexingtonky.gov to get to that site, or just Google search it. And there we post like the larger policy things that we're working on. So you can educate yourself about what we're working on, but then also there are opportunities to give feedback on those things that then is all compiled. So that's an online way that you can interact with us. We've also started doing we always kind of attend neighborhood meetings and things like that, but we've also started doing some very targeted, what we call committee previews or council expos, where we go out and hold an event about a particular topic. So we did one on transportation a couple years ago. I was working on a bigger policy piece with Vice Mayor Wu, the Preservation and Growth Management Program, and we did a whole community preview about that, so people could go around to stations, learn about the different pieces of it, and then give feedback. So we're really trying to increase the ways that you can come and interact with us.
Now, you represent the 5th District, and there are many, many other districts. So talk about the cooperation that needs to take place in order for some major issues to be solved.
Yeah, so we have 15 total council members. Three of those are at-large council members, and of those three, the highest vote getter is the vice mayor. They represent the whole county. Then we have 12 districts, and each district has its own district council member. So I'm the District 5 representative. When we are trying to work on policy, you have to think about most of our policy passes with a majority vote, right? So that's 8 people on our council. So you have to be working with your colleagues and building those relationships and having conversations and making sure everyone is educated and earning the votes of your colleagues on policy. So you have to have at least 8.
8 is the magic number.
Yes.
In this case. Yeah. And this is a nonpartisan position. Explain that and the benefits of that.
You know, when we talk right now about state and federal government, it is very partisan, and I think it has become tribal, and I think that limits compromise. It limits that across the aisle talking that we will sometimes hear about. On our local government level, this is the mayor's office as well. These are nonpartisan positions. So when you go to vote for me or another council member or the mayor, it doesn't mark whether we are a Democrat, a Republican, an independent, other, you know, doesn't have our party on there. And when we are functioning as a government, we don't caucus like other levels of government where you have like a Democratic caucus. So then the Democrats are kind of expected to vote together or the Republicans are expected to vote together. We don't have that. So we talk with each other about whatever issue is on the table. I know that I can go to a colleague, and we might not have agreed on this issue over here, but now we're talking about a separate thing, and those two things do not relate, right? We can have the conversation about whatever is in front of us. So I really value that about our government. I also value that our community respects that, and oftentimes what you might see, and if you pay attention to campaigns, when people start trying to reference partisan politics in our local government campaigns, our community pushes back.
I would agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'll be honest, thank you, because local government is what's giving me hope right now. The partisanship that is going on, I feel like they're always campaigning and never governing. And I think that's just really not necessarily healthy for our democracy.
Yeah, and I think it limits that ability to make a choice that you think might be the best for your community and the people you represent, even if it's not the same as what your party wants. You know, I think that really limits how a legislator might behave.
What about from a constituent's perspective? What is local government in general responsible for, and what are some things that you get calls about that you just have no control over?
Yeah. You know, sadly, I think people don't really understand local government.
Mm-hmm.
We hear about state and federal all the time, right? So it is local government's job to help educate. And I think our local news outlets do a good job of covering council. We have organizations like Civic Lex and League of Women Voters who you've been engaging in, like the observers.
Observer Corps.
Helping to write about local government and educate people on local government. But I think people don't even know who represents them on local government.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of education that has to happen there. We are responsible for land use decisions here, including housing. which we talk a lot about our affordable housing and housing crisis and homelessness, streets and roads, lights and sidewalks, waste management, social services. You know, all of those things fall under local government here for our county. I think there is some tension sometimes when there are things that come up that local government doesn't have control over. So Fayette County Public Schools, completely separate from Lexington, Fayette, Urban County government. We do not have any authority over them. University of Kentucky, they actually kind of have this special carve out as the local land grant university or the state land grant university. Universities have kind of special authority over what they do, and we don't really have a lot of say over that. We work with them, but it's not like we can tell them, you can't expand into this space, you know. The health department is separate. Utilities are separate. This is something that comes up a lot. When you have like Kentucky American Water or Kentucky Utilities or some of the telecoms groups like Windstream or Metronet, those all go through state-level approvals. They hold what's called a franchise agreement with us that says they can operate here, but we don't actually have authority over like where they can operate in an easement or what they can do in an easement. So when we ask for things, we are asking nicely. We can't really tell them yes or no to do a thing or not. That is the state. That's at the Public Services Commission. So when you talk about rate changes or any of those kinds of things, we can give our opinion and we can advocate for our community, but we don't really have authority over those groups.
I want to go back to the issue of public comment and how important that is with Engage. You're working on other access points, but say the person wants to come down to City Hall. What is the protocol to do that?
Yeah, we've also been trying to streamline this process and make it easier for folks. So when you come to the Government Center, 200 East Main Street, and you come in the front of the door, you will first have to check in with our security team, and you get a little sticker with your name on it so everybody knows you're a guest. Then you come up to the second floor. There are elevators and stairs, so there are accessible ways to get there. And you check in. There will be two people outside with these iPads. You check in with those folks there, and you tell them that you would like to give public comment, and you sign it. And then that information is teleported over the air, you know, to the iPad on the other side where whoever's running the meeting sits. Typically for our council meetings and our work sessions, that's the mayor. And then she'll have the list of people who have signed up to speak, and then she can call on them. There are two public comment times in a meeting. There's public comment for items that are on the agenda. That's what we're going to be making decisions about that day. If you are coming to speak about something that is on the agenda, then you get to speak at the very start of the meeting so that you have an opportunity to speak to us before we vote. That makes sense, right? If you are speaking about something that is not on the agenda, then there's a public comment time at the very end of the meeting for that. So you can come and do both, and we often have people for both. But if it's something of importance for that particular day, you get to go first.
Makes sense.
Absolutely.
It's at the top of the list. Yeah.
I should also add, you get to, in our council meetings, you can yield your time to others. So if you want, everybody gets 3 minutes to speak. If you come with a friend, but they don't want to speak and they want to give you their 3 minutes, you can do that so you can have a total time of 9 minutes. So you can bring a friend as well.
I like that so much. I guess as far as engagement is concerned, kind of pulling on that string a little bit more, I am proudly a new member of the MEAC, which is the Mayor's International Commission.
Congratulations.
And so, but I think a lot of people don't realize that they can apply if they have interests in housing or international or even several arts organizations and whatnot have different boards and commissions. Where would they go to just kind of scope that out and see if they might want to be engaged that way?
Yeah, there's a boards and commissions page for LFUCG. So if you go to lexingtonky.gov, I love the search feature that's right at the top. You can also translate the page into lots of different languages. That's available on the page. If you type in boards and commissions on the little search, then it will come up with the page for the boards and commissions, and you can see the list of all of the different ones. And then you can click on any individual one to find out more about it. So if you click on a particular board or commission, then you'll get a page that tells you what that is. Usually it has like when they meet and how often. And then it might have a link to documents like the agenda or meeting minutes. And there's usually a link for the current roster of members. So you can see that. And you can also see if there are any vacancies at the time. So all of that shows up. And then there's a little button that says apply. So if you want to apply, you can push that button and you can submit all of your information. You can apply for more than one board within one application. So if you have a couple different interests, you should put those in your application as you go. And then once those are kept on file and as openings come up, they'll pull all the people that applied for that particular board. But they vary widely on interests and topic areas. So there's usually something for everyone.
I have a question about your decision to run for the first time. And how did that match up with day one being around the horseshoe?
Yeah. For me, it was, you know, I was involved in educating our youth as a faculty member at UK. And I had a daughter who was 8 at the time, and I was a Girl Scout troop leader. So I was thinking about, you know, not only undergraduates, but youth and like the opportunities that they might see in our community. And how we talk about the brain drain where people graduate and move away, you know. We also talk about some of the gaps that we see in services. And I was serving on different nonprofits and seeing like we did have gaps in services, particularly around like the homeless response. I was seeing that as when I was volunteering at the Hope Center. And it just made me think that particularly for our basic needs, so housing, food access, safety. And for me, that includes mental and physical well-being. You know, I was seeing some gaps there that I felt like, you know, for me to really make an impact, I have to bump up my level. Like, I can't just do it at this nonprofit. I have to start thinking about the wider community. And so that's what led me there. I was thinking about those things. I think once I got on council, I have still been able to direct my work that way. I think I do have to have that balance between the constituent responses that are just the day-to-day things that come up. But then if you look at the policies that I've chosen to work on, I've been really able to focus in those areas.
A lot of people don't necessarily know how local government is set up, kind of going back to that education piece. Tell us how it mirrors what they see at the federal level and how it might be different.
Yeah. So, you know, there's a diagram of the hierarchy of our government. And that's on I believe it's on the website, but I have a copy in my office, and it starts with the residents, community members, right?
I love that.
That is the top of the hierarchy. So, you know, when I go and speak with high schoolers and school groups, I tell them, you're my boss. But then under that, it's the mayor and the council members. So if you think of different legislative structures where you have, you know, the executive branch, that would be the mayor. Mm-hmm. And then you have your legislative branch, that's us, the council members. And when you go under the legislative branch, if you look at like House and Senate at the state and federal level, I would kind of think of that as like our district council members and our at-large council members. And even the term links are different in that way that you see at these other levels of government. So our council members are our policymakers, the legislative branch. So we're doing that work, and then the constituent responses. And then the rest of government really falls under the mayor. She's the administration. And so she has the CAO's office, our chief administrative officer. She also has like economic development under her office as a separate branch. But then under that is all of the commissioners. So our commissioners, we have our commissioner of law, we have our commissioner of finance. So those are kind of government related. But then we have environmental quality and public works. We have housing development and housing advocacy and community development. We have public safety. We have social services. We have general services, which is where all of our parks and government spaces fall. And then back to government, we have our chief information officer, so our IT folks too with that commissioner as well.
How often do the commissioners turn over? Are they appointed positions or are they?
They're appointed by the mayor. Okay. Sorry to interrupt your question.
No.
They're appointed by the mayor. And usually, like what I have seen in the past is they usually come in, you know, with the mayor. There's usually between mayors, when there's a mayor change in the mayor, there's a transition team that then kind of works on those appointments. And you see some commissioners stay across mayors. And then sometimes they'll, you know, have another opportunity that they leave for, and then that role will get filled. But it's all mayoral appointment, but they are confirmed by council.
Okay.
You know how you see confirmation hearings at upper levels of government? We do that for our commissioners as well. So they come and they present to us, and then we vote to confirm them.
Great.
How do you feel about the level of transparency between council and the constituents right now?
You know, we work on that, right? We want it to be transparent. So that's one of the reasons we built the Engage Lexington page, because then we could, you know, put timelines on there, put all the drafts of documents on there, and keep everybody informed about what's going on. We also fall subject to all the open records policies that all the upper levels of government are required to abide by, and open meetings. So we have rules around open meetings that have to be open to the public. They have to be in a place that people can get to or published online. We have to announce all of the meetings by a certain timeline beforehand and make agendas available and all of that. I feel good about our transparency and the level that we really try to share things with the public. And I haven't gotten a lot of complaints about that. Sometimes I'll occasionally get a constituent will reach out and say, this online video wasn't working or something like that. And I reach out to our Lex TV people and they fix it really quickly. They're excellent. So we really do try to work on that. All of our archives of our meetings are available through Lex TV, which is on our government page. And we have a YouTube page where things are posted as well.
You know, I have to give a shout out, putting my president of the league hat on, for the transparency that you show, because that's one of the functions of the League of Women Voters is to really kind of hold government accountable. And transparency has been a real issue, particularly at the state level in Kentucky. And so I value the fact that the council here on the local level is so transparent. And we have a great opportunity to always make things a little bit better, right? We have an observer corps that's getting out to some of these boards and commissions meetings, and we're partnering with Civic Lex on that. So if anybody's ever interested in a little down low on what's going on there, you can look at the Civic Lex newsletter and see what's happening there.
Yeah, I've seen some of the folks that have participated in that in the meeting, and we recognize the folks. It's a small room, so we can recognize the people that are showing up regularly. And we'll, you know, if you have a question while you're there, wave at one of us, and we'll come answer your question and chat with you. So again, accessible government here.
Accessible, absolutely.
And this current council is one of the most diverse that we've ever had. Talk about that too.
Yeah. There's multiple levels of diversity. There is diversity based on, you know, we have several members that are persons of color. We have people who are different ages. You know, what someone was joking with me yesterday that it was the vice mayor, and he's in his early 50s, and he was like, you know, based on who's running next year, it's going to be weird if I'm the oldest, you know, because usually we have people in their 60s and 70s on council, and that has been a majority for a long time. So the age diversity is there. We have multiple folks in the LGBTQ community, women, you know, it isn't when you look across governments, there isn't always a time where you have a majority of women. So we have seen that. And so lots of different areas, I would say.
And that's a strength. I mean,
yeah,
when we're
is.
Talking about a very diverse community, you need representation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So going back to another kind of basic civics type of education here, if someone has an idea that they really want to see come through and become law. How does that work here?
Yeah, typically the process for something going through the legislative process is a council member putting an item in committee. That's the start. That's kind of like where we say we're sponsoring this, whatever the item is, you know, this policy. And then that goes through our, it gets assigned to a particular committee, like at the state level, you see that. And then you'll have a presentation in committee. The council would vote an item on from committee or not, or say it needs more work or give feedback. And then it goes to the full council for approval and moving to first and second reading. So some of those processes are very similar to what you see at the state level. For me, an idea might start because of some of the, you know, things I campaigned on and what my areas of interest are. So I might work on something and pick something up based on that. It might be a new thing. It might be something I saw in another city. There could be lots of reasons that I bring a policy forward. But also I've had... you know, constituents reach out to me and say, I'm interested in this particular thing, but I'm seeing that we don't have this here, or could we change this ordinance to be this instead? An example of that is I'm working with Councilmember Curtis right now on a change in our tethering law for animals, because some constituents reached out with concerns over a situation with an animal in a neighborhood where it was really, really hot in the summer, and they had concerns about the animal being outdoors and whether it had access to water. And so we worked with Animal Care and Control, who oversees, you know, like animal protections in our community, and have made some recommended or are working on suggesting some changes to the language in our ordinance. And that's going to be in our public social services and public safety committee in March for their review. So that started because a constituent reached out to us.
Fantastic. You know, it's that's the thing that I think people forget sometimes, is that people just like us came up with all the laws that are in place. And if we don't like them or want to change them or think something else would be better, this is the way to get that done, right? Mm-hmm. Is to be able to bring it forward. And if you can sell your idea to a council person, that's a really good step in the right direction. And then it's about getting those 8 people on board, right?
Yeah, right. Hope a lot of our votes are unanimous. We get everyone on board, but there are some that are split votes.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
Talk about just the many different opportunities that you have sitting down with neighborhood associations and things of that nature.
Yeah. I have several active neighborhood meetings and neighborhood associations that we have around my district. I know other district council members have that as well. First, I would say, if you don't have a neighborhood association, it actually benefits you to start one. They can be powerful. It's a way to build community, not only around an issue that the neighborhood might have, but also to do social things together. And if you're interested in starting a neighborhood association, contact your council member and we can kind of walk you through that process. It's very easy. But the neighborhoods are great because, again, it's like they can come together, decide what issues they may want their council member to address, and then speak as one voice. And having that combined organization is really helpful for us because we know, you know, this idea has been vetted by a group already when it comes to us because it's coming through the neighborhood association instead of one individual. And so that's a powerful thing. But, you know, the neighborhood meeting that I'm going to tonight, they asked me for a couple different things to talk about on the agenda. So they asked me to talk about any updates to our snow and ice removal plan, which I will share with them everything that's been going on. They asked me to talk about a hearing that's going to happen at our Board of Adjustment about a property in their neighborhood. So they wanted some background information on that. So I'm going to bring them that. They asked for any, you know, updates to a development that's going on for a grocery store that's in their community that the community has wanted for a long time, and any other general policy updates that I want to give. So they'll give me some agenda items and I come and speak. And I'm happy to go to neighborhood meetings. I think it's a great way for them to connect with their council member, but then also for us to have opportunity to educate them about what's going on.
You know, I know you talked about the school system not being under the purview of local government, but there's a benefit, I think, to getting our council members that are making these decisions into schools. What's your thought about that?
I also really value the perspective of youth in our community. You know, we're building the community for the future.
Mm-hmm.
So we need their input because we need to know what they want to see in the community because it's going to be theirs. It is theirs, but their adult future, it's theirs. It's for them. So I like to go to the schools because I think it's an opportunity to connect with folks. One of the local groups that I really have enjoyed working with is the Bluegrass Youth Sustainability Council.
Oh, yeah.
And they're run by someone, Tracine Logsdon, that is within Fayette County Public Schools, but they also have private school students involved with the group because it's a bluegrass initiative and not just Fayette County Public Schools. But they work on environmental initiatives, and they choose a particular thing that they want to work on, and then they work on it all together and come up with a product at the end of the year. And it's just such a great group to work with because they're motivated for their own futures and thinking about the community, and I value that.
That youth voice, it's so important, and it's important from the perspective of giving them some exposure so they understand when they turn 18 why they should vote.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of them are like, why does it matter? My voice doesn't matter. And yes, in fact, it really, really does. And so good on you for getting out there and working with some of these kids and whatnot, because they can see what can be in their future.
And I will put in a little plug. We have two things that go on that I think are really good for students as well. We have the Summer Youth Internship Program. And this is where students in our high schools can go and do summer internships. So it gives them professional development skills. And then they, you know, get work experience. And a lot of those positions are actually within government. So they get to have a lot of exposure there. So that program is really great. And you can Google that one and it will come up. And the applications typically open in like March and April for that. And then if someone is interested in government, come and do a shadow day or something with your council member. I had a student shadow me, and then she did an internship later with me as a part of her coursework because she had a research class that she could she was taking, and she could come and work with me on her research. So we set up a whole program where she worked to give input on our Greenways master plan from the youth perspective. So she collected data with her peers, and then we built a whole a report for the consultants that were working on that at the government level. So she had a definite impact.
I love it. I love that partnership piece. And I guess this is, I'm making a little pivot here because it brought to mind, it seems like government is doing more and more kind of public-private partnerships in things, that it's not just the government's responsibility to do everything. What kinds of successes have you seen in partnerships with other companies or other organizations? Or
yeah, I would say like the biggest one that I experienced, but this is because of some of my policy work, is the partnerships that we have with our nonprofit service providers.
Mm-hmm.
I serve on our homelessness prevention and intervention board, and we have so many providers in our community that are working to get and keep people housed and to provide the case management that they need to stay stably housed when needed. And so those partnerships are very important. And to be frank, government is bulky.
Yeah.
We have a lot of red tape. Things are slow. And that's for the transparency reasons that we all want. But that means that you don't want us doing everything. And we don't have the capacity to do everything. People want government to do certain things and not do everything. And I understand that there are differences in perspective there. But what we can do is help support those partners. And the one biggest way I see that is the work that and the partnerships that we have with our local nonprofits. They're so valuable to us.
That's a great shout out. And while government does help to fund some of the nonprofit type of work, a whole lot of that is community and volunteers and, mm-hmm. and donations and all that kind of thing. So
yes.
That's probably the most excellent example that you could bring up.
Yeah.
And the league needs volunteers all the time as well, correct?
Absolutely, we do. And we are very interested in having anybody who's interested come on board to learn more about the civic side of life and how they can support and keep that transparency and all that kind of thing.
And I will say it's fun to be in the league. Before I was on council, I helped do the candidate forums.
Yes.
And I really enjoy that. And that is one of the things that I will likely go back to once I am no longer on council.
I am so glad to hear that. That was my bailiwick, too. That's how we actually got to know each other at the very beginning was working on those candidate forums together, because that's so important to be able to send voters into the ballot box knowing, mm-hmm. you know, it's not just like, oh, that I've heard that name. Let's click this one. That can be a really dicey way to vote. So,
yeah. And it's good because you have the comparison because you have people answering questions together. And you know, when I was on the candidate side, those things, especially for a new candidate, can be a little overwhelming and scary because you have like 90 seconds to answer your question. You have to hear the question, formulate an answer, organize it, and spit it back out in that time. And that can be a little daunting. But it is good to like get kind of like the basic views of everyone.
Exactly. Know what they stand for. And that's, again, such a great thing about our nonpartisan government structure is I really hear solutions instead of party talk mm-hmm. when we do the local types of candidate forums. So for anyone who doesn't know, the League is a nonpartisan organization. We do take positions on issues, particularly those that affect our democracy and also women. But I think that it's a purer form of government when mm-hmm. it's really ideas that are shared and people, you know, coalesce around, I think this person has enough ideas that are similar or aligned with mine that I want to vote for them. So,
yeah.
You had mentioned this, and that's why I'm going to bring up the question, the decision not to run again. Talk about how you arrived at that, and were there any second thoughts about that?
Well, this has been meaningful work. You know, and I'm in my last year of my term. I did decide not to run for re-election. And there were a couple different personal and professional reasons that that led to that decision. Like, one, I have a teenager who's going to college in the fall, and I was thinking about how I wanted to spend my summer. And did I want to, you know, be there with her before she's like launched out into the world and spend time with my family in that concentrated way? Or did I want to be campaigning? And, you know, I don't think people really know how much time with their families that candidates sacrifice when they're going through that process, through an election cycle. It's intense. You're expected to be everywhere out in the community. So that means you're not at home. And there are times when I've been willing to do that. I have done that for several cycles, but this time was one that felt important to my family. And then, you know, there are some professional reasons too. I have talked about how time intensive this is, and when you are people will joke that, you know, most of the time, elected officials are retired or, you know, wealthy or a realtor.
Playing golf all the time.
But those are there are folks that can afford to, you know, take a break from a career to do this work or are past the time where they're in that main focus of their profession.
Yeah.
And so I think what you're seeing in some of the folks that have decided not to run for re-election or have stepped back recently, it's been that kind of pull about their professional life and their career, and that was some of what I was feeling as well.
Yeah, and again, that's going to be a major tenet with the Civic Assembly, correct?
Absolutely. That is one of the major questions that they're going to try to address as far as the time and pay gap mm-hmm. of it is amazing what you all do for the amount of money that we're paying you to do it. So I am glad that topic has really been elevated. But I would also say good for you you have done tremendous service to this city. And it is so valued, but that's what a healthy democracy is all about, right? Is letting somebody else be able to step up and take their turn to carry that load.
Yeah.
And so you should feel really good about all the things that that you have done, and we
Thank
really
you.
Appreciate it.
I'm very proud of the work that I have accomplished, and I still have some things to do this year. But I agree with you. I believe in term limits. I haven't gone all the way to the end of my term limit. On council, you can do 12 consecutive years, and that's either 6 terms for a district council member or 3 for an at-large council member, because those are 4-year terms. But you don't want a council member to get to the place where they're burned out or complacent.
Or so, a professional politician.
Right. I think there should be some turnover. And when you're starting to feel a little bit of that, then maybe it's a time to step back and let someone come in with new ideas and new energy when that happens.
I think that's great. Since you mentioned it and you talked about talking to a bunch of your constituents about it, can you give us a snapshot of your thoughts around this recent snowstorm?
Yeah.
Because I felt really bad about the level of anger and vitriol that went out, because people don't realize that was ice. That was not snow. Mm-hmm. And that only happens once in 20, 30 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. And so maybe talk a little bit about the investment in infrastructure to be able to handle those types of things.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a perfect storm, right? Because not only did we have horrible ice, but then it never got warm.
Right.
And
right.
Usually we get a snowstorm and then in the next week it all melts.
Yeah,
and it's no big deal.
It's Lexington and Kentucky weather, right? It can be sunny in shorts and then snow the next day, right? But yeah, and this is where I'm going to put a little bit of a partisan hat on, because I'm going to talk about my values and beliefs. I think
that
we
works.
Are seeing more extreme weather.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in climate change, and I think that is some of what we're experiencing here. We are seeing more extreme weather patterns, and I think there is data to document that the rainstorms that we have are more intense. We're getting more tornado warnings. When we are getting snow and ice and cold weather, it is coming through harder and longer. And I think while what we have done to address snow and these kind of winter weather plans from the past, they have been effective for what we were experiencing then. But we are going to have to continue to change as our climate evolves. And that is one of the things that I think happened here, is the weather patterns are just different. The cold really does impact how effective our plan is. So a couple of things that kind of pop into my mind where I've been talking with folks is the drop in temperatures really matters. The difference between ice and snow really matters. When we did pre-treat roads, but when then you have thick layers of ice that get driven over and compacted, it becomes an ice block, and that is not something that you can just run a plow over. You have to use heavy equipment to break up that ice and remove it, especially once it's adhered to the concrete. So you have issues like that are going on, where we had some heavy equipment, but we don't experience regular ice storms like that, where we would keep an amount of equipment to address that every single time, right? We did invest in more equipment and contract, you know, time for people to come in and help our teams between the last year and this year. So we did invest almost $3 million into that to increase our weather response from the last January. And it just wasn't enough this time. So we were trying to evolve and we were trying to make change, but it just wasn't enough. And we're now doing an after action review, so that all of the details of everything that happened are being dug into. And let me just tell you, like, our workers, they were working long hours, 12-hour shifts, rotating all the time. They were out in the cold all the time. So I have so much respect for, like, everybody that was actually on the ground working, because I think that cannot be underestimated.
True heroes.
So much time and energy and effort. And I was feeling bad for them getting beat up, because they did not deserve it. They were doing everything they could. But then we also just released an RFP
request for proposals.
I couldn't think of the R for a moment. We use the acronym so much, that request for proposals for a contractor to be able to be under contract with us to do ice removal specifically. So that RFP has been released. It's out right now so people can respond. Because this time we were having to pull contractors in kind of under an emergency, right? This would have a contract for someone going forward with us that would be able to just focus on that.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. Thank you so much. Is there anything that we have not talked about that comes to mind that you would love for people to know about local government?
Well, I mean, I mentioned the crews that are working in our on the snow and ice response and how hard they were working. But our local government staff, everyone that works at LFUCG, it's thousands of employees, and they are just excellent. I have enjoyed working with everyone, and I'm really going to miss a lot of the folks once I'm off of council. But I think that the quality of people that we have in our local government is just excellent. So I want the community to know that. Sometimes governments are under-resourced, and sometimes we might not have as many staff members in that particular office that you're contacting as we would want to have, but the people that are there are excellent. I think other council members would say this too. Reach out to us, please. We might not respond to you in that exact moment because we get a lot of emails and phone calls and have a lot of work to do, but like we will get back to you. And I think those connections and that just like reach out about a policy or concern you have, it really can lead to change in your community. So please contact us.
And if you could give advice to anybody who wants to maybe follow in your footsteps and run for council, what would that piece of advice be?
Reach out to your council member for that too. Because, you know, we are thinking about who might come next. We care about this work or we wouldn't be here. And we want to have productive and successful councils. So if you're thinking about running, talk to your council members because we want to know who's thinking about it and who might come next.
This has been an excellent conversation.
I know we could talk all day.
We could. We absolutely could. But we know that you have a busy schedule, Councilmember Sheehan, and we thank you so much for your time today. And obviously, we've got more to cover later on in subsequent episodes of Voting Matters.
We do indeed. We'll keep on that civic engagement and civic education piece, and don't hesitate to touch base with Alan. If you have a topic that you'd love for us to cover.
Yes, indeed. Just reach out, and we're going to be here all the way through the election, May, the primaries, and then the general in early November. So keep us on in your downloads, please.
Absolutely, and share.
Okay, well, that is going to wrap it up for today's edition, and we will see you next time on Voting Matters.
You've been listening to Voting Matters, a podcast produced in collaboration with WUKY and the League of Women Voters. Subscribe to our show wherever you get your podcasts or download Voting Matters from the podcast page at wuky.org. We also have links from the organizations and guests mentioned in this program. See you next time for Voting Matters.